From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 161 and the second part of the Ketoverse crossover with the Fabulously Keto podcast. If you haven't already, go back to the first episode to find out more about Jackie and Louise's new podcast, as well as an intro about each of them. They have each been on the podcast as extraordinary women with their own episodes, and Louise has been on multiple times talking about traveling, the PHC conference, and more. I'll list all those episodes in the show notes, which you can find at ketowomanpodcast.com/161 or via the link in the description wherever you are listening to this episode. This week, we continue our conversation. It's a fun chat that rambles all over the place, from addictive foods and migraines to wine, which has a nice ironic edge to it. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed recording.
And how do you go with other experiments? I mean, you've done the no sweetener September. What else have you done to perhaps tweak and modify your keto?
Well, I do need to look at dairy. I don't want to.
Me too.
Neither do I. I'm in denial.
But I do need to look at it. I kind of did cut back on it as a, I guess I got into that momentum with the sweeteners. And there are two food groups that are other things that are very problematic for me. Those are nuts and dairy. And when I say problematic in craving mindset type way, but also to a degree of physical and digestive way. If I overdo nuts, I tend to get a bit of a tummy ache. I certainly tend to overdo them. So there will be a keto rollover in that it can do the whole knock you out of ketosis. Not that, you know, I'm not really a fan of being too worried about that, but they have that problem, nuts being, although they're a great keto food, They are relatively carby. And if you're good at sticking to small serving sizes, not a problem. Perfect keto food. If you're like me and you have a tendency to eat a bit too much, those carbs can stack up fairly quickly. So it's a problem from that point of view. And problem for me in the going backwards and forwards too often. That's always the telltale sign for me. If it keeps popping into my mind, well, just go and get another spoonful of that almond butter. Doesn't matter that it's, you know, it's, you're not having it as a dessert or whatever it is. And interestingly, that's something I thought I was going to have to cut nut butters out completely. That has been a bit my treat food on the no sweetener journey. And I have been able to control them much, much better. Mm. So it's still a potential problem area, but it's something that I can have in my life and enjoy as a treat. And then there's the dairy. Well, that had a natural tail off, actually, because of the sweetener thing. So, of course, the ice cream went straight away.
Mm.
Anything that's sweet was out the window as far as dairy was concerned. So those higher carb dairy items like cream. Cream cheese was something that I'd been having in the fridge and been eating snack-wise as well as including in some of my ice cream recipes. But that was all too easy to eat straight out of the tub as well. And that, as you know, is on the higher carb end. So that went. And I started sticking to just the as close to zero as possible cheeses and only having those. Because I do think I have a lactose issue. And so if I can keep it really low, it's not too much of a problem. But if I'm honest, I know that all cheese and all dairy affects me to a certain extent. I feel it in my sinuses. And if I've eaten quite a lot, I start feeling in my throat that feeling, you know, when you think you're coming down with a cold.
Mm.
So it definitely sort of impacts the mucousy type zones. So I know I do have an issue. It's just whether I want to go completely without or whether I'm prepared to accept. And I'm somewhere in between. In the most part, I keep it to a minimum or a not a daily thing, but accept the consequences when I have it. And I'm certainly not prepared, at least yet, to cut out butter. That's the big one for me. I could actually go without cheese, probably, at least for periods of time. But butter is a daily thing. So very, very difficult. I don't know. I might do a month of no dairy, but I'm really not sure because I think long term, I don't know. It's good to do a challenge, isn't it? Because it really gives you a very clear picture of what it feels like to be without it. So you've got a good comparison. So at some point I might do it, but whether it would ever stick long term, I don't know.
Yeah. I was thinking I needed to do it. I was going to do it now for November, but then Lou convinced me to leave all the testing till after Christmas, maybe February.
Very difficult. Very difficult. And I think it really does depend what the consequences are. And that's why it's really good to do these challenges, to do elimination diets of some kind. I think I'd always say to anybody who has any suspect foods to at some point or other do an elimination diet just to see what impact all the different kind of foods do have. Because it can be weird things like they have been talking a lot to lipedema ladies recently, and I have to say I'm one. I have lipedema. I haven't had an official diagnosis, but I'm definitely a lippy lady, as they like to call themselves. And we tend to be much more impacted by things like dairy, nuts, but also things like nightshade seem to be a very, very common issue in that group. And of course, it's a common issue for a lot of people. And there are sneaky things. So you can have something that you don't have much of, like paprika. You look on ingredients and see how many products paprika is in. Mm. Look at your mayonnaise. I bet there's a bit of paprika in there.
Yeah, definitely.
It's in all sorts of things. And if you're extremely sensitive to it, that could be having a negative impact on you. You know, you'd have no idea. It's a bit like a lot of us are used to looking for gluten and wheat because we can be highly sensitive to it. Well, potentially something like paprika could be the same because it's a nightshade. You might steer clear of all the obvious ones, like not eating tomatoes and peppers and aubergines. But paprika, little tiny thing at the end of an ingredients list, it might not be something that you're used to looking for. So I think it's a really good idea just to find out if you're sensitive to things, because knowledge is power, isn't it? Mm. And sometimes it can be things that you don't have to avoid completely. You might just have to limit.
Yeah.
You know, you might have a tipping point where you can have a certain amount, a small amount at the weekends, whatever it is, without kicking off a really negative cycle. But finding out these things is so useful, I think, to be able to make good choices.
Yes.
Did you find out, I know that both Jackie and yourself have migraines. Did you find out what really triggered your migraines?
Well, it's always a combination, really, when it comes to migraines. People talk about it in different ways. You hear people talking about migraine stacking. Elena Gross likes migraine buckets. And really what happens is that your bucket fills up with things. And there's no, or very rarely anyway, there's no one thing that gives you a migraine. There can be things that are very typical triggers for you. So smell always used to be something that I was very sensitive to. And I could almost guarantee that if I was in an enclosed space with someone wearing perfume, for example, or around smokers, the chances were very, very good that I'd end up with a migraine. But I can be in those situations now, and the chances are very good that I will not get a migraine. So you could be kind of tricked into thinking that smells give me migraines. Well, they kind of do, but as a cumulative effect. Mm. So you have all sorts of things in your migraine bucket, and different things have different weights. And for me, my diet had took up a massive part of that bucket. I have no idea how much, but I'm guessing at least half. And so when I sorted that out, which for me was keto, my migraines dropped, you know, almost completely for time. I've had periods where they've come back a bit. I'm in that place where I'm sort of getting them sometimes. There are all sorts of other things, you see, though, that screw around with it. So maybe menopause is a big one that affects it. Can do it positively. My mother, for example, has had migraines for decades. She's gone through menopause now and her migraines have all but gone. Mine seem to have gone a bit the other way. I seem to be having a few more associated with menopause. But sleep is a big one for me. So if I've not had good sleep, the chances of me getting a migraine are much higher. So that takes up a lot of my bucket. Stress is a massive one. You know, if I'm having a really, really stressful few days, I'm going to start getting migraines almost definitely. And then all those other little things like potentially different food things. So there are typical ones, aren't there? Coffee, dark chocolate, cheese, all these things cited as things that will give you a migraine. You never know what's going to just make your bucket spill over. But my point is, if you can take out some of the big things that fill up a lot of the bucket, all those little things that end up tipping you over, that often end up getting the blame for your migraine, no longer will. Mm. Because you've emptied half your bucket out and you put in those things that tipped you over before and they no longer do. Obviously, sometimes they do. Mm. I mean, that's how it works for me. I don't know about you, Jackie. What's your experience been?
I don't know what triggers my migraines. Previously, I think it was hormonal, but then I used to get them so often that I couldn't relate them to anything. And I remember one specific time, a long time ago, where I went out to dinner on a Saturday night. I had the same food one weekend, the same drink, and the following weekend I had exactly the same and I got a migraine. So one weekend I didn't and one weekend I did.
Okay.
But I don't know what was the triggering thing that caused my migraine. I can't put it down to cheese. I can't put it down to red wine or what was the other things you said?
Oh, chocolate. I mean, there are all sorts of things. Yeah.
There was nothing specifically like that. So I don't know what caused it. They went down a lot when I was pregnant. So I had them while I was pregnant, I had them quite badly. And then after the pregnancy, they dropped off a bit.
Which implies hormones.
They weren't as bad after that, but I still used to get them quite a lot. And now I go through phases like you. So I'm currently in a phase where I seem to be getting them more often. And then I go through months and months and months where I don't have any. And I do not know what causes it. Mm. I don't drink alcohol. It's not alcohol related. Don't know. Electrolytes, I've been trying to keep my electrolytes up. So I've added in a teaspoon of salt every day. So I have half a teaspoon in the morning, half a teaspoon in the evening. That seems to help a little bit. If I feel it coming on, I'll take some extra salt, those sorts of things. But I don't know what causes them.
It's tricky, isn't it? Certainly hormonal stuff always used to be a big thing for me, and maybe still is. The weather pressure, it's a bit of a joke in our family because that's always the thing with my mother, that it's the weather. But it really can be the weather. I've found, we say it's the weather, it's the pressure, I think.
I would go with that, yeah.
I'm more likely to get a migraine on those days where it feels very close, where there's, I don't know how that relates to exactly what that means in terms of weather pressure, but those more overcast, heavy pressure days, that can be something that makes it more likely. Possibly things to do with light levels. Certainly one of the big things for me, because I used to get them a lot and I used to get them for long periods of time. So there was, I think my record was a full 2 weeks in 1 month, but I used to get them a lot. And a big problem, and this is why I stopped taking specific migraine medication, and actually I'm very careful about what I take now, tends to be ibuprofen. Sometimes an ibuprofen paracetamol combo works pretty well. But one of the biggest problems with migraines and headaches are rebound migraines and headaches. And you get into that with taking the very medication that is supposed to be helping. If you take them past, and I don't know what the exact figure is, but I think I read, I'll dig out the books and I'll give you the links. But they were very helpful for me. I think it's like 2 or 3 days. If you're taking medication for more than a couple of days in a row, you're going to start getting into rebound headaches, which are basically caused by the medication you're taking to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get into that vicious cycle. And that's what I found. And also the meds become less and less effective.
Yes.
So I was taking these quite strong migraine medications, specifically, I forget, triptans.
Yeah, me too.
Were the ones I was taking. Never particularly liked taking them because they have an impact on your system. They do have nasty side effects. The earlier you take them, actually, the lower the side effects are. So you get into the habit of, as soon as you feel like the migraine might be coming on, you take them. But that can lead into taking more and more. And I just decided I wasn't going to take them anymore. I've read a lot about triptans and how they can be really problematic in and of themselves as far as migraines go, and actually not only prolonging in the moment, but prolonging long term, you having migraines. So I decided I wasn't going to use them anymore. And I haven't used them for years, and I definitely feel better for it. But I get the odd migraine that I just can't get to go. I can do 3 rounds of the ibuprofen paracetamol in a day and they won't go. And one thing I've noticed, that I will always take some tablets where I didn't used to. If I had a headache/migraine, I can usually tell it's a migraine because it's behind my eye, but I do confuse the two. If I have one in the evening, before, I could go to sleep without taking medication, knowing that I would wake up without it. Now, if I go to sleep with one, I'll wake up with it. And then that day will be one of those days, most likely, that I can't get rid of it.
Mm.
And it could end up being, a 2-3 day migraine. So I learned things, and so they evolve like anything else, like how well keto works for us. I think migraines and how you deal with them, especially tied in with things that help like keto, it evolves, and you have to be open to continuously changing how you deal with them.
Mm. I do still have sumatriptan pills around. I've always got them around, but I try not to take them, but I don't take anything.
Mm.
But I know 3 days, I've got 72 hours of this horrible, it's not even the pain, is not that much. It's just the whole feeling that takes over your body.
Mm.
And so long as I don't get the really bad nausea in my stomach, I can cope with that. And then, so I don't take anything. If the nausea comes on really badly, then I have to take one.
Mm.
But whereas I used to take 9 a month, I now take 2 a year.
Oh, perfect.
I can cope with that.
Yeah, I can remember him talking about it, and I can't remember what he cited, but I think he said, look, if you're not taking more than 1 or 2 a month, then this is a medication that is probably quite effective for you, and that's a level that's okay to use. But if you're finding you're taking it a lot, lot more, then you need to think about not using it anymore, which is where I was at.
Yeah, and it's hard to do that.
It was just becoming less and less effective. I had to keep upping the dose, and that's a sure danger sign for me.
Mm.
And what about your depression? I mean, you're mentioning about how sort of obviously coming on in your early tweens, and how has low-carb keto impacted on your mood?
Well, initially it helped a lot, and then I've had periods where I've had depressive episodes again. But yes, I started coming out of a long depression really earlier this year, I would say, I don't know, March, April, started to come out of it. But previous to that, had really been a good year or so, that for the bulk of the time, I was not feeling good at all. I had brief periods of respite where, you know, if I was going away, or with something like with you coming to stay, it's almost like when something like that happens, you can kind of function normally. It's almost like it goes in a box and it goes on the shelf and it's kind of lurking there right in the background. You can't say you're jumping around happy, but you can just shelve it while you're distracted by going away, going to the UK, being with family, having someone to stay. And then as soon as that bit is over, you have to take that box back off the shelf and open it up, and it all comes back. So I think a lot of people who suffer from depression will get this, that often other people don't really know, or certainly don't know the level that you're going through at home, because you put on a good face. And often you can literally be feeling that when you're in company for that brief period of time. Like I say, this sort of box on a shelf thing. And they don't really get the full extent of what it feels like to be living with it at home.
Mm.
And everyone experiences that in different ways. And for me, it ebbs and flows, the intensity. I can have, when I'm really in it, I can have days where it's really visceral. I mean, it is there. I have literally, I think it's a combination of anxiety and depression. I can feel it crawling around under my skin. Literally, it's like I've got ants crawling under my skin. And then there's this heavy, heavy weight of depression that again feels very real. It's pressing down on me. And I can have periods of time where on an emotional knife edge, so I'm crying all the time, I get angry at the drop of the hat, all those kind of things. And it's just very difficult to get through the day. And I quite easily fall into the old habits. My way of dealing with depression was eating carbs and sleeping.
Mm.
And of course, that works really well, because you get the whole thing you get from the carbs, you get that numbing effect, and then you tend to go to sleep.
Mm.
And that's what I used to just want to spend my time asleep, really. And so it was very effective. And although it did do quite a lot of damage, it was less damaging than some other substances I could have chosen. So in some ways, I'm thankful that my body and mind chose that route, chose those things to do that had that kind of reaction with my depression. It also served a purpose that I had to unpack through therapy, of putting up a defense, literally a defensive wall of fat, that kept people away, especially sexual relationships. It kept away. And I was really only fully aware of that when it came down. And I was sort of reveling in the fact that I didn't have this fat anymore, and buying clothes that I could enjoy personally. But one of the knock-on effects of that, people started looking at me in a different way.
Mm.
And it was only when they started doing that that I fell apart emotionally, really. And I suddenly, with my counsellor, made that connection that I felt very uncomfortable because people weren't necessarily looking at me in a sexual way, although some of them were. And that kind of scrutiny I didn't like. And it was only then really that I realized that however you want to look at it, but I look at it as this big defensive wall of fat was a protective layer. I think people often fail to fully understand and appreciate that these things are actually our body's way of protecting us. And I get particularly upset with people who talk about before and after photos. They'll post them and they can be really dramatic. One of these days I'll post mine and it's really dramatic. You might not recognize me from my before picture. And they'll say things like, I hate that before. I'm never going to be like that again. I'm never going to be that person again. But the fact of the matter is you are still that person.
Yeah.
That person is inside you and they're probably in extreme pain. And they'll be crying when you say that because actually they were the strong ones. They were the ones who got you through that period of time when you were probably maybe at rock bottom. That was the part of you that got you through that time. And I think we tend to forget that these defense mechanisms that we throw up, it's our as human beings, we have this natural intelligence, which is incredible. It's our level of self-preservation is quite something. And if you start looking at these things, these habits that start getting formed as your body's way of protecting you, it can be much easier to start undoing them. You know, me putting on weight and putting up that defensive wall of fat was my way of stopping unwanted or at least lowering unwanted sexual advances because I was assaulted when I was 9 years old.
Mm.
It makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It does.
And it makes perfect sense that actually this happens subconsciously. This is your clever, clever body's way of dealing with these things. And it's only actually when you drop them and all of a sudden you're getting looked at and all of a sudden that takes you right back to when you were 9 years old and you're terrified and it's overwhelming and you don't really understand why. And this is where therapy is a great idea because they'll help you unpack that and they'll help you work through it and they'll help you understand why all these things are happening. But once your body doesn't need to protect you anymore, this is why changing your diet is great and can have fantastic effects, have a massive impact on your life. But if any of your problems are emotionally based,
absolutely,
until you deal with that, they'll keep coming back. Mm. And that is why people, keto works so well for me. I lost all the weight in the first year, but I've started to regain or I've put it all back on again. Yeah, because you haven't dealt with those underlying problems. Actually, if you resolve all the problem areas in your life, whatever they are, sleep, emotion, depression, migraines, you know, movement, whatever it is, relationships, connectivity, not spending enough time outside, all those things, actually, the weight will probably resolve itself on its own. You know, for me, I've been amazed at what an impact coming in. If you think of that all as a sort of cycle going round and round, at some point you need to throw a spanner in literally to stop that wheel turning. You've got to find a way of getting in there and start feeling better. And that's where I think something like keto works really well because it gets you to a place where you feel able to start tackling the other things.
Mm.
And I never thought I'd say the way I can start feeling better, the way out of depression is to change what I eat because I felt so controlled by what I ate. But now it's the easiest thing to start dialing back in that I know will have a good impact on my mood. So with my depression, I had been eating more carby foods. And when I started dialing that back in, my mood started lifting. I started doing other things. I started getting interested in the psych side. That's when Monday Mindset started. And, you know, so it started having this cumulative effect in a positive way. But my way in was diet. And for some people, it might be something else. It might be exercise. Some people make that inroad in different ways. Whatever it is, you've just got to find a way of throwing a spanner in and stop that endless cycle repeating to get you to a place where you can start tackling the really hard stuff.
So it was really a disruption.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Like you have to disrupt the habits or disrupt the patterns or disrupt the, you know, what has become your, as you said about your Monday mindset, it was making the unfamiliar familiar. Mm. So making things, taking things in a new way. And that certainly being our keto twins, I had spent that time in therapy before choosing.
Which is a really good
before
idea.
Choosing the surgery. Mm. So I had about 3 years of therapy. So a lot of the unpacking the emotions, and I remember spending a lot of my time preparing my thesis, asleep on the floor. So I did some of my best academic work, I can say, in a carb coma in my office floor. But a lot of that was because I was obviously in a very unhappy marriage that was falling apart, that a lot of those emotions. And for me, yeah, that defense's big wall of fat was because of, you know, the relationship. And I was self-soothing through food. And having that investment in the therapy certainly helped cognitive behavior-wise. You know, what were my triggers? How did it make me feel? What was the behavior? And, you know, what were those thoughts and feelings associated with that in those food choices?
Perfect way of doing it as well. Yeah. I mean, that is the textbook way of approaching something like weight loss surgery. It's not the way I did it. I did it all about face, really, and in a different order. But to get the most out of something, if you decide that weight loss surgery is a good tool for you, and I think it is, I do think it's overprescribed actually in a lot of places. But when it is the right choice for you, to go into it like you did, with at least starting to deal with the emotional side first before you then take that step, is the perfect approach.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that we'll link in the show notes our episode with the two keto dudes. And I want to sort of obviously give a shout out to our third interviewee on that episode, which was Donna Lordy, who, you know, had a different surgery.
Yeah.
I think that particular episode was a really interesting one for us because Carl, unbeknownst to him, you know, had this particular, I suppose, approach to say how radical it was, how drastic it is. And it's not something that I, for myself, when I came up against these sorts of preconceived ideas or, you know, and associated stigmas that people had about judging, about my decision, a very personal decision that, as you said, it's a tool in my toolkit. You know, and I'm sure you've had people say, have you regretted it? You know, if you'd only known about keto beforehand,
for sure,
you know, would you still have gone through with it? And it's like, I can't live in the past. I'm living in the now. And low-carb keto has maintained a significant part of my success in keeping it off. And I remember being talking as, you know, at the conferences, and one of the, a general practitioner, an Australian guy, said, but you're one of the lucky ones. And it's like, what do you mean? But you've kept it off. And it's like, it's only because two things. I had fixed the brain stuff, the stuff that was, you know, above the mouth, to use Darren Graham's, you know, idea. That, you know, fixing that stuff about what I then put in my mouth, which happens to be low-carb keto, and that's how I've kept it off. And it's not without the reach, but I know your experience was very different in the sense that you didn't have any pre-surgical advice and, like me, had no nutrition advice afterwards. I was just told, you can eat whatever you want, just only a little bit left.
Yeah, I mean, I was given nutrition advice. Wasn't very good.
Have a third of a baguette. That was it, wasn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, incredible. They had me eating, they wanted me to eat six times a day. I mean, it felt like constant, because when I was in hospital for about 8 days. I nearly went mad. So they literally, you know, they brought you the meals you were supposed to eat and they told you off if you didn't eat them. And they were big on dairy. So you would have, the breakfast would be one of those sort of biscotti things, you know, the dried out bread stuff with, I think they did bring me butter in the end, but butter jam. And then they bring you a mid-morning snack, which was some kind of dairy thing, a yogurt or a flan, they call it. It's like a caramel custard type
cream
thing.
Cream caramel.
Yeah, cream caramel, that's the one. But, you know, loaded with sugar. Low fat, of course, yay. And then there would be a lunch, which would be, would always be this horrible soup that would come out and, you know, minced up. They had me on only like a day of liquids, and then they had me straight on minced up food. But it would be minced up some meat and veg. But yeah, there would be some bread. Can you believe it? Like, this is a couple of days out of surgery. And then another snack mid-afternoon, which would be another one of these dairy things. Then there would be, oh, and you'd have a dairy thing with your meals as well. And then there was an evening meal, which was a repeat really of the lunch with more bread and all the rest of it. And then another snack later on. And I was supposed to do this when I went home. And I was wondering why I was actually almost constantly hungry. You know, because I was doing what they said. I had these dried out biscuit things that I would have for a snack with cream cheese on or whatever. I'd be eating these sort of dairy type stuff, and I'd be eating little and often, which in some ways you can see why they're getting you to do, because you've got a tiny, teeny little stomach. But you don't need to be doing that. You should be eating less often, and yeah, less food, because you can't eat too much. But it was just the wrong advice, and I thought I'd done something wrong because I felt hungry all the time. I thought, you know, the thing I wasn't supposed to feel was hungry. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
When I started eating more appropriately, I didn't feel hungry. So yeah, I was given advice, but it was bad. And yeah, I was supposed to have a third of baguette with every meal, which, I mean, I know it's France, but that's just ridiculous. And certainly there was no, I think if you lived in the town where I had the operation, there was some kind of a regular meetup type thing available for people to go to, but I didn't have access to it. So I had no follow-up help, really. That was all self-driven and you know, things I'd found online. That was one of the benefits, actually, is when I had the band, there was nothing, and I had no one to talk to about it. And I did actually find some online groups a little while after that, before I went into the sleeve. So going into the sleeve, I was talking to people online, so starting to get that information. And it was one of the friends I made through those groups that introduced me to low carb and keto.
So on a timeline, when was the gastric band?
Oh, goodness me. Probably, I don't know without looking up, it's got to be a good 10 years ago. Possibly more, actually. No, I think it was 2008 that I had the band. I think my sleeve was round about 2012.
Yeah.
So that feels about right time-wise.
Yeah, because we had it the same year. So 2012.
Yeah. And so it was a while before I got into keto. I was more into sort of a low carb paleo approach before that. I had a rule fairly early on that I could eat something if it was recognizable from a plant in particular. So I wouldn't eat things like processed things like flour, for example, but I would eat things like chickpeas, you know, things that you could potentially go and harvest somewhere.
Mm.
So it was a kind of a whole food approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
That I was on for quite a while. And that's really my weight loss was on that kind of approach, coupled with the sleeve. So a restricted amount of food I could eat. And just sort of gradually getting my diet a bit better.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really until I started regaining weight that I got into keto, as many people do, as a weight loss tool, really. I had no idea what kind of roll-on effect it would have as far as depression and migraines go.
Yeah.
And that's what kept me to it. And I think that happens a lot. Yeah. A lot of people approach it from a weight loss perspective. What keeps them are all the other great things they discover.
Mm. All the benefits, yeah.
Are all the other stuff. Yeah, and we're totally on the same page about that sort of thing. And it was really sort of that one person, you know, that one, your one with Kristen. And, you know, obviously my mum was my one, and that it really keeps you, obviously, that first person that gets you in. But your journey then takes on its own approach, and as obviously merged when we met through the two keto dudes.
That's right. And your approach changes a lot.
Yeah.
You think back to what we were like back in those early days. You know, you have that early evangelical side and probably a bit dogmatic about things. I certainly was. My approach has changed quite a lot.
Yeah. I've got better at biting my tongue.
Yeah.
Not saying anything.
But I know that, you know, there's been some great stoushes in the online communities where, you know, where we've sort of gone in, you know, with guns blazing and we're ready to, you know, got the gloves on and we're having these stoushes with those pro groups or this pro group or these sorts of things that,
That's right.
You sort of start to, oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, you can pick the tribe, you know, and that's fine. You've got your own lived experience, you know. That's your lived experience for that person. But you're not me. You're not a menopausal woman who's had weight loss surgery. But, you know, sure, you go and do whatever.
That's what I like about it. It's not a prescriptive lifestyle. It's not a prescriptive dietary approach. You know, people ask, what is keto? And you can give them broad sweep terms. But effectively, keto is what you make it. Keto is an approach that should work around you, not the other way around. It's not for you to fit into keto. Obviously, there are general rules. Like, you know, you're not going to be keto if you're eating 200 grams of carbs a day, because, you know, the whole thing about being ketogenic is that you're at least in and out of ketosis, that's where the name comes from. But, you know, with those things aside, there are so many different approaches. You can make keto work for you. I can pretty well guarantee it.
Yeah.
It's not a one size fits all. It just isn't. And anyone who tells you it is, and it'll only work if you do it a certain way, is telling porcupines.
Yeah.
Keto ones, obviously.
If it was so prescriptive, I would never have stuck with it.
No, me neither.
I probably wouldn't even have tried it.
Same.
So, given that you're one of the keto rock stars, podcasters, that sort of stuff, and you not produce one, but you produce two podcasts now, what are the next steps for this particular keto rock goddess star person?
Stop. Stop flattering me. I don't like it. It's embarrassing. But a part of me appreciates it too, of course. Well, really, it's the connecting a lot more with the UK community. That's my next big step, and hopefully becoming a much more active presence over there. I've already got relationships with people that, you know, have been done remotely, have been done through meeting people at conferences, friends I've made that I've happened to meet, like you two. But being an active presence by being on the ground, you know, I've tried to have some kind of presence, but ultimately I'm still across the channel. I'm still very much a Brit, and that's the kind of thing that I engage with, the same actually as I do in America. I have a lot of people I connect with over there. But I'm looking forward to being actively engaged locally and nationally in the UK, already thinking along the lines, like I said, of local groups, maybe looking at starting a new Facebook group, for example, being a lot more UK specific. So, you know, looking at things that are specific to the UK, so products that are available and different tools and resources that are available locally in the UK. So I guess that's really the biggest change for me. The other thing that I'm doing, there's been a bit put on hold because I'm so busy, but going much more down the mindset track, I'm doing some training to be a counsellor. So that's something I want to bring in. What I've realised, I've been thinking for a while about doing some kind of keto program. I toyed with the idea of coaching. I toyed with the idea of doing a course of some kind, and it never felt quite right. Something was stopping me from doing that. Something was holding me back. I love the podcasts. I love the Facebook group. I love the kind of interaction and help and advice I'm able to give in those spaces. And it was something that I wanted to extend, not only to get help to more people, but obviously potentially start making some money from. We all need money. So that was also another consideration. But something held me back. Something wasn't right. And what I've come to realize is that although keto, what you eat, whatever it is, not necessarily keto, is very important as far as your health and wellness goes. For me, what I realized was the key, the core component that was important to get right was the emotional aspect. So that's where I felt I needed to top up my training. And I wanted to be able to get adequate training in being able to help people in that sense. So I'm not necessarily going to, but who knows where the training will go and what I feel like. I'm not necessarily looking at becoming a counselor per se, but I want that bedrock of training to be able to focus a holistic health approach with that emotional aspect as my core. So that's where I'm headed as far as training and professional life goes, I guess, with all the other things floating around, like podcasts and local keto groups and all those things.
Yeah, right.
It's exciting times. And the good thing was, because we had the opportunity with the two keto dudes to go to conferences and to Keto Fest, where, as you said, you know, connecting across the other big pond in the United States. And there's a little bit of envy when we go there and we can go to Whole Foods and we can, you know, have a look
They've
at all the
products.
There
seems to be more and more products coming out in the UK, I have to say. I keep noticing new ones popping up. So I think the UK likes to catch up quickly on what the US does in those terms. It probably won't be that long before we get allulose as well, which would be great.
It won't be long, because I know that in some of the UK spaces that there is product development. We part of the WhatsApp groups or the Facebook groups where, you know, there are the keto cafes. There's one in Greenwich, I think it is.
Oh, really?
Jackie.
Hammersmith.
Okay. There's some of those influencers there on Instagram. We've interviewed Nicola Howard. So there's soon a keto low-carb supermarket coming online, so in the UK. So we know that there's, as you're saying, they're playing a bit of catch-up.
And Ali Houston has got his keto ice cream coming on.
Mm-hmm. Always love some ice cream. I mean, people love products, don't they? I think
it's easy.
I do think they can be dangerous territory, keto products. I think they're a very, very useful transition tool. I think a lot of us have to watch out for them being dangerous territory when it comes to cravings and overeating. Because let's face it, most of us who get ourselves in the kind of mess that we start looking for something like keto to get ourselves out of have some kind of level of addictive behavior when it comes to food. And those kind of products do tap into that. And absolutely, they're a better choice than their carb equivalents. But I do think they should come with a bit of a caution label. But I think it's great as well. I'm just like everyone else. I love trying new products. Absolutely.
I just look with envy in those groups, and they sort of, you know, they talk about going to Trader Joe's or to Whole Foods or, you know, the big Costco's. But I know the UK has Costco. And Australia has Costco. So when they sort of mention about allulose, which I can't get, there's no way here in Thailand or Australia.
That's right.
There's things, I just have that FOMO, that fear of missing out of the products. So it's just not fair. But but exactly what you're saying, it takes me back to first principles. I have to make my own cream cheese. I can buy it. Don't get me wrong, I can buy it, but it's expensive. You know, cream and dairy and butter is expensive. There's loads of chicken and pork, but I can't get beef. But I can. It's frozen. And again, it's imported. And lamb. So when I'm looking at the carnivore groups and, you know, they're eating just beef, it's like, well, that doesn't quite work for me in my context here. So it just then gets me into thinking, I'm going to have to shift my mindset. And as you mentioned, your podcast partner, Terry Lance, had said about this particular book about the mindsets and, you know, looking at this as a growth mindset where I'm going to have to shift and think about not being restrictive.
The Carol Dweck book about growth mindset.
Yeah. You know, it was really quite a light bulb moment that I'm going to have to start to think about all the things that I can't have that made me unhappy. And I'm wishing my time here until I can go get a steak in Australia or a lamb chop. But it's about, well, I'm going to have to think about the 101 ways with chicken, 101 ways with pork.
That's right.
I'm going to become very good at cooking chicken and pork with a smile.
It's good to adapt to your local environment. And that's part of taps back into, again, what we said about keto being adaptive and making it adapt to you, but adapting to what you can get and what you can't get. And yes, not thinking so much about the things you can't have, but exploring and getting excited about the things you can have.
Which brings me back to Chiang Mai, bamboo worms.
Interesting. What are bamboo worms? You can eat.
Yeah, you can eat them. Rock doan.
I said to my dad, actually, the next time I'm in Thailand, I want to try all the bugs. I've seen these posts about the bugs you can buy.
Absolutely.
Deep fried bugs. I want to try them all.
I can literally just walk out my street and there's a cart there with the bug man. So there's bug man. There's chicken lady. There's egg lady.
You tried them. Are they tasty?
Not the crickets and the creepy crawly beetle bugs, but these little worms were actually quite tasty and quite sort of crunchy. And the other thing I tried the other weekend was red ant eggs.
Red ant eggs.
Eggs. Yeah. So ant the eggs of the ant. Yes.
Oh.
And they had it in, you know, the papaya salad, the som tam. So it's got a vinaigrette and they're like popping candy. So do you remember that as a kid? You just put it in your mouth and it just pops.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, they'll be on the list as well then.
Yeah.
You're very adventurous. I'm not sure I'd go that far.
You know, chicken feet.
I must admit, I saw some pictures. I think they're called water beetles or something. They're quite big ones that you eat. I'd probably try them. I probably would try them. I'd give it a go, but I'm not sure I'd go for too many of those. But yeah, I'd like to give them a go. Why not?
So the Costco equivalent, so Macro, the big supermarket wholesaler. So when you go into the butcher area, so this is totally nose to tail. So literally you have the snouts, the heads, and then you have obviously, you know, feet and all the gizzards, the linings, pancreas, like sweetbreads, stomach, so liver, kidneys, everything you can possibly think of chicken, pork, that's all there. So that's quite exciting to look at, but I still sort of veer to the other section. So haven't quite done that.
I'll try most things. There are things that I don't like. I'm not wild on the offaly things, really mostly for the flavour. I like things like chicken liver pate, for example, but absolutely, I don't really like chicken livers. It's partly the texture. Like foie gras is a delicacy here. I don't actually, there are humane ways of producing it now, but in the main, I'm squeamish about the way it's produced, actually, so I don't like it from that point of view. But a delicacy is pan-fried foie gras, and I had this once years and years ago. I went to a fancy restaurant, which is not too far from here. It was one of these, you know, these fancy ones you see on MasterChef. In fact, it's been on MasterChef as one of the places that they get sent, you know, when they get towards the finals and they get sent to these fancy kitchens to go and work from and learn from. And they all have to make their signature dish. Well, this was one of them, and their signature dish was a starter, which was called From the Fields or something. And it had little violet flowers and stuff like that. And I've seen this dish on MasterChef and I remember eating it. It was this 10 course taster menu I had back. A friend of mine whose mother lives in the Auvergne, and it's not too far from here, the restaurant. And we went there. I must have been, I don't know, early 20s. So talking a long time ago, and I still remember it. It was incredible. But one of the courses was pan fried foie gras. And I didn't like it. It is the texture of liver, but it's much softer. It's almost like a mousse, and it's very delicate flavor, but I don't like it. It was less the flavour and more the texture. So it gets into texture with me with a lot of these offaly type things. But
okay.
I'd definitely try, yeah, things like bugs or especially when you sort of, you deep fry stuff so it gets crispy. I'm more inclined to try things anyway. no matter what they look like.
But the Roctuin, the little bamboo worms, were just like salty, crunchy little, you know, the little crisps that are the string ones, the little thin French fry in a packet.
Yeah, tasty. I'd eat those.
Yeah. So.
And these pork scratchings you got up in the north, are those just like quite plain or are they seasoned? What are they taste-wise?
No. They don't have a lot of seasoning. You know, like the Black Country ones that I liked, they had the salt and the pepper on it. So these are just basically fried. Right. They don't have any. Andrew got the chili ones. He got the fire.
I was going to say, they must have some chili ones. There's no way in Thailand they're not going to have chili on them.
They have chili ones. So they were quite nice. And so the other version that they have the real puffy ones, which make great for, you know, for breading. Mm. Then basically like a little thin cut. So when the pork loin is thinly cut, then they would deep fry that.
Okay.
So they have these sort of ones that sort of all look, crunchy, as opposed to the big meaty ones that are like the Black Country ones. Mm. They don't have a seasoning, but they have a flavour. Right. And what I can imagine is because they're done in a soybean oil, it has that sort of, I was going to use the word rancid, oily taste to it, which is a bit off-putting, only because I know that that oil is cheap and it's plentiful. So palm oil is cheap, the soybeans, the canola is not so cheap. But, yeah, they do actually use a lot of the seed oils.
Not ideal.
I've noticed that when I go to the street and eat street food, that I get achy. That's what I really notice when I'm eating out. So I tend not to do that so much these days. I do a lot of the cooking at home, and especially because I've got my Thermomix now as well. So I've got my big fancy whiz-bang machine.
Did you have to get another one? Is that the one that Andrew melted on the stove?
Oh, that was the Instant Pot. So, yes, Andrew melted the Instant Pot.
You didn't manage to get it fixed?
Yes, we got it fixed.
Oh, did? Oh, good.
We got a spare part.
There's usually a man in a garage or on a stall somewhere in Bangkok who can fix these things. They're very much a fixing culture, I think.
Absolutely. So we ended up getting a spare part. Thank you, eBay.
Great.
And we managed to do the repairs. So, yes, Andrew was in my bad books for...
So he survived that then, yeah, just.
Well, we don't tell him that, though. We just keep him on a thin wire leash, just know his place.
And he broke the waffle machine.
Oh, he dropped the waffle machine.
A bit later.
Yeah, he did. He's going for 2 out of 3 right now, so he dropped the mini dash.
Oh, he's really going for broke, yeah. Oh, dear. Uh-oh.
The truffle maker. You introduced me, your old-fashioned waffle maker on the stovetop. That was...
Yeah, I got a vintage one. I have to say that that's not something I make very often because that's definitely a danger food. and it was something... The problem with that for me, and I don't think it's a problem, those kind of foods are a problem, especially if you're including them as part of your meal rather than adding them to your meal. So when you see people who maybe ate, like I'm trying to think of a meal, like a fry-up or something, and they remove part of it to add the chaffle to it, so it effectively stays the same overall. Great, no problem. If you're like me, you just start adding it to the previous meal. So this is just something that's surplus to requirements. And also, if you're like me and trying to replicate crappy white toast, which I did very effectively, you get into the old white toast habit, which is having toast and butter and Marmite as a snack. So it was very much a dangerous item, so I had to stop with that.
Jackie, I don't know if you know, when you're making the crackers, like your little cheese crackers that you made, which were absolutely delicious, were they just a vehicle for butter and Marmite, or did they become?
Just butter, really. So I don't make them. That's another thing I don't make a lot of, because I'll know that they're there out in the kitchen and I will want to go and have something. So
same.
While we've been recording, my stomach has been grumbling away and rumbling away. But if those cheese crackers were there, I would be heading out and thinking, oh, I'm hungry now. I'm going to eat some of those. So they were the Edam or Gouda slices cut into four and then cooked in the oven for 15 minutes. And started off just eating them as the cheese crackers, but I really like them with lots of butter on. So I have to be really careful with those. And the seed crackers that you introduced me to, the Real Meal Revolution ones, that's just another vehicle for butter.
See, and that's the problem, and one of the many problems, is they have a voice, and the container from the kitchen.
Very loud.
Going, eat me, eat me. I never had any success with the cheese crackers. I don't know if it was the cheese I was using or I don't know. And I actually saw Carolina Carter make them at one time when we were at Breckenridge. And she did them most perfectly in a little muffin tin, and they came out absolutely wonderful. I don't know if it was a strangling cheese, moisture content, whatever it was, it never worked for me. But the Real Meal Revolution crackers are an excellent way to make butter and Vegemite.
Marmite.
You know, it's just a perfect vehicle. Vegemite.
Marmite. two against one, afraid.
I know, I'm out this time. And next you'll be telling me that Cadbury's chocolate tastes different. Australian Cadbury's chocolate tastes different. UK chocolate is
better. I bet it does.
Well, it's been taken over by the States now, hasn't it?
And it's not the same.
Is it not?
It's not the same anymore.
I must admit, though, I mean, even so, I mean, Cadbury's chocolate is nice, but it is so, it's so sweet and almost not chocolate tasting once you've been keto for a while. Although the... I don't know, is that Cadbury or Galaxy? I think Galaxy is a different company, isn't it? I'm not sure.
Mars.
That was always my weakness.
Mars. Is it Mars? Yeah, Mars.
Mm. I thought your weakness was the Haagen-Dazs.
Oh, yeah, but that's ice cream. That's different. I mean, we were talking about chocolate. It's another category. It's another food type.
Mine's fruit and nut.
Oh, no, I've never liked... Oh, no. Don't like the fruit bit.
It's not the same since the American company took over. And now I find, because I have had it recently.
Well, American chocolate's very different, isn't it? So they might have actually changed the recipe, I guess.
I think they did change the recipe early on.
Right.
And then I went on to Galaxy because I didn't like it at all. And then they must have slightly changed it back, but not quite. So I did have it. And when I first went low carb, because I didn't know very much, I read Gary Taub's Why We Get Fat, and I just cut things out. I didn't do any more looking into anything. I just cut things out. But I was still having my chocolate every evening. And it was only when I found out more about keto that I realised, no sugar, I shouldn't have chocolate. So that went out the window. But now I've had it recently a couple of times, and it's really different taste. And I don't know if it's a different taste because the recipe is different or because I'm different.
Both, probably.
So, yeah.
Mm. I mean, it does taste. You can get back into the taste of it. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, been very there, easily.
Done that many a time. But if I was to have some now, and you need to not push yourself past that hurdle of getting used to it again, because I can guarantee if I had some now, I would probably even be spitting it out. It would just be too sickly, too sweet. So I need to just hold on to that.
Which was interesting. You know, the Alter Eco block that... Mm. I had, that's 85%.
That's too sweet for me now, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's too sweet. Mm. So I actually had some 100% chocolate, which I used to make this mousse treat last night. Like, they were little buttons and that sort of stuff, so I melted a couple of those. And it was like, yeah, that's totally fine. It was, you know, once you mix it, you blend it with some cream and you have a couple of berries and nuts, it certainly takes that bitterness off of it. So
it depends on the brand as well. I mean,
absolutely.
I've tried Lindt 100%, even Lindt sort of 90-95%, and it just tastes like cardboard. It's fine in things. But the stuff I got from, I'm trying to think of the name of the company. It's Matthew de Trumbull, Cliffman. It's Roasters. It's a little coffee shop in the States. He actually does mail order in the States. I shouldn't imagine it's international. But his 100% chocolate, I can eat that 100% and relatively enjoy it. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's sort of virtually no sweetness in it. But it's worlds apart. It has these layers of flavour that one of the more generic brands at the same percentage just doesn't have. Mm. So, you know, if you can find an artisanal sort of chocolate maker, you might find you can get at least very high, up to 95%, and get enjoyment out of that compared to a more generic brand that you'd have to be going to about 85% for it not to taste too bitter.
Yeah, I can't go any higher than 85%. I have to have 85%. And then I have to put loads of cream on top to make it palatable because I still find it too bitter.
It's interesting. So it's a bit like wine, I think, chocolate. There are very subtle differences and layers of flavour.
But that was the thing about, you know, having French wine when I was with you, and I was just like, wow, this is so light, but it makes sense that it's light. Whereas Australian wine, and one of my favourite Australian wines is a Coonawarra, and which is big and bold and it's meaty, and you need a knife and a fork to, you know, to drink it because it's so rich. But then, you know, having the French food, and it's like, that's why it makes sense. It's so light and it sort of is more, it has a different drinkability to it.
And there are heavier wines, Cahors, which is not far from me. That's a much heavier rounded wine and was actually used, I think, to add to other wines to give it some body. Maybe still is. But in general, I like the French wines because they're lighter, and I like the lighter of the French wines. So, you know, things like a lot of the Burgundies, for example, lovely light reds that you can drink with fish, you know, they're that light. I really like them. I much prefer a light wine, white and red. That's to my taste. So France is definitely a good place for me wine-wise. Not that I really drink it much at all anymore. It has quite a big impact on me physically that I don't particularly like. I only drink it socially. I don't just, rarely anyway, occasionally I fancy a glass of wine by myself, but not very often. So I hardly ever drink it, and I'm fine with that. But I do enjoy, I've got much more snobby when it comes to wine. I'd rather spend a little bit more and have it far less frequently than drink crappy wine.
Definitely can't. I can't drink, certainly post-surgery. And obviously
it impacts
keto,
a lot, doesn't it, the surgery?
I can't. I just don't have any match fitness, which is, can't do it.
Yeah, I found that 2 glasses of wine and I feel absolutely fine. I am not drunk. I'm absolutely perfect. But the next day, I feel like I've drunk a bottle of wine. I feel really hungover. I get all the sensations of being hungover on just 2 glasses of wine.
Well, it's that time of the show for Keto Women. I don't know what you ladies do when it comes to, do you have something at the end that you're going to surprise me with? But it's the part of my show where I ask you two for a top tip. Who wants to go first? Jackie?
She's put us on the spot here. Oh my gosh. I should have remembered her.
I hadn't thought of one. Oh yeah, I didn't remember one. I blame it on you, Louise, for organising this really quickly.
Spur of the moment top tips are usually very good. Go for it.
Okay. I guess one of mine, which was going back to what we just spoke about wine, is don't drink your calories. Just eat food.
Good one.
There you go. Very simple one.
Like it. Lou?
I think because we're all menopausal women, well, I'm just assuming, you know, we're coming into...
I'm done, apparently.
Oh!
Mine, I'm through and done in like a year or something. Apparently, according to blood tests and general symptoms, been there, done it quickly was hardly a problem. I think with hindsight, there have been more things than I appreciated, like quite possibly that extended depression period had something to do with it. And there were definitely some things like hot flushes, but overall, I think I got off fairly lightly.
Well,
hate to rub it in.
Yeah, thank you. Go you. Not only are you a keto rock star goddess, but you've, you know, keto rock star goddess royalty. Anyway, so being postmenopausal woman, I think we need to look at eating to our bodies. So I think it needs to be that we need to fit, as you said, it's not a prescriptive one size fits all. We need to modify our approach according to who we are, what we are, what we do, and particularly our life stages. So it's very different being a young athletic person, breastfeeding woman, you know, corporate woman, sedentary, but also now we have to be mindful as we do about we're going into our sort of final sunset chapter years, that we need to make sure that we're meeting our protein requirements, particularly for ourselves.
And we're quite used to that because that's a weight loss surgery mantra, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Protein first. So we actually got into the habit of that, but it is a good habit to continue.
I think still as a society, we tend to under-eat protein.
Mm. Absolutely.
And it's becoming more harder and harder for people to get their head around it. And so even when you say keto is moderate protein, actually we probably should still be eating a bit more than that.
And I think it's also getting harder when we have these corporate pressures to be going plant-based, and because of the health washing messages that plants are pure and animal products is bad for the environment. I think, you know, there's a lot of mixed messaging that's out there, and to get quality sources of protein, you know, we're not talking it has to be grass-fed from the happy cows in the paddock, but as long as it's a quality protein source that is going to meet your protein needs.
It's great if it can be, of course. I mean, I think, you know, quality protein that's been well grown, well nurtured, well looked after, but yeah, budget comes into it for a lot of us, and
absolutely,
we're restricted by that. But certainly if you can afford it, if I could afford to eat any type of protein source, it would be the very best from that point of view, for not only for me but for the animal. But it is a big restriction, and you know, you have to just roll with what you've got.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I don't usually do a top tip, but there is something that's come up that's very near and dear to my heart, so I'm going to add one this week as a bit of a special. And I'd, like I say, I don't know what you two lovely ladies do. I don't know if you ask for top tips or anything similar, but if you do, this is one for your audience. That is to love your before. Love who you were before every bit as much as you're learning to love the new you.
I like that.
And this is not female focus necessarily, but I'm talking from my own experience. But that is to, when you have those photos to compare, that before and after, love her, honor her, cherish her, respect her as the truly courageous, determined, incredible woman that she was and still is. She's still in there inside you, and she deserves honor and respect and love. So please, please give it to her, because she's a very, very special part of you. There's my top tip.
Beautiful.
I love that. Yeah.
So thank you so much. What a very great pleasure this has been. It's been a kind of throwing backwards and forwards of the hot seat and who's host and who's guest. It's been great fun. I've really enjoyed it. We should do it again.
Good. Yeah, I'm up for it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm definitely up for it, because I know that certainly Daisy, you know, is very special, near and dear to me.
Same.
And I know that, we've had such a mutual journey, you know, ups and downs. And it was so wonderful for the 18 months I was in the UK to be in the time zone, as I said. I'm in your
it
time
was,
zone.
It was lovely, wasn't it? Having you closer. Yeah.
No, it was good. It was really good.
And I remember when you pretended to go over to see Daisy, but actually saw Richard
that was
instead.
That was funny. That was a good ruse.
Sneaky, but good. But anyway, so yeah, it's been our pleasure to have a keto rock star. Yeah, and thank you for your contribution to the keto community, as you're doing, as you know, moderating Facebook groups and the Keto Woman podcast and the Monday Mindset, of which we'll have in our show notes.
Thanks
and,
for that.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, really good.
It's a very great pleasure. It's what I love to do. To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from an unknown author. If you continue to carry the bricks from your past, you will end up building the same house. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.